This week's episode of One Shot is brought to you by the Lodge Management Group. Wings and beer, almost as good as podcasts. That's why Chicago Summer Wing Fest wants to give listeners a free t-shirt when they buy tickets with the offer code PODCAST. Available at wingfest.net. Hello, heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm James D'Amato, your Game Master. This week, we're wrapping up our indie parade with a game that I've been wanting to bring you guys for a long time. That game is Shooting the Moon by Emily Kerr Boss. I've been on something of a romance kick for the past couple of months because I think it's a gaming genre that is very underserved by the market. However, one designer who head and shoulders stands above everyone else is Emily Kerr Boss. Emily has approached the subject of romance from a couple different angles, and Shooting the Moon is one of my favorites. It focuses on a classic story, two suitors dueling for the hand of a single beloved. Like most story games, Shooting the Moon zeroes in players on several broad themes that keep coming up again and again throughout the game. It's got mechanics that get out of the way so you can focus on great, scenic roleplay. It swings back and forth the way these sorts of stories are supposed to do. And it even does these stories one better by giving the beloved more personality and agency in a three-player game. It blends the themes of love and romance by tying in a meaty conflict. The best part is to play this game, I was joined by Jess Fink and Eric Colossal. Now you guys probably know those two through their comics. Eric does the fantastic comic Rutabaga about an adventure chef, and Jess is responsible for some of the coolest erotic and autobiographical comics on the web, including one of my personal favorites, Chester 5000. And we'll get into all of that right after I talk about Gen Con. Guys, Gen Con is this week, and if you want to meet Kat, myself, or JPC while you're at the show, your best bet is to attend one of our panels. On Friday at 1 p.m, Kat and I are going to be doing a panel on the art of openings. That's focusing on making the very first scene of your game as effective as possible. And we're going to be holding that at Embassy Suites Ambassador Room 2, Friday at 1 p.m. Then Friday at 6, Kat, JPC, and myself will be giving a presentation on playing as performance and how playing a game for an actual play show like One Shot differs from normal play. We're going to be ending that one with a fan Q&A, and we'll be going out for drinks with everyone after we do the panel. That one is Friday, 6 p.m. at the Crown Plaza, Pennsylvania Station. Finally, before we get to the show, we have to thank our generous Patreon backers. Ken Pellegrino.
Cool last name, Ken. And thank you. Brian Dean, thank you.
Thank you. Marcel Cabato. Marcel, if we got it wrong, you know where to complain.
Thank you, Marcel.
To us directly.
Eric Nelson, thank you so much.
Eric Nelson, thanks.
Jeremy Van Schalkovic, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeremy. Gary Blunt. Thanks, Gary.
William Scott Palmer. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Corinne Taylor.
Yeah!
Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Corinne.
I still have a package to mail you. Thank you for sending us that record. You're the best.
Oh, man, she's the person who sent us Galactic Boogie.
And we played with her Metatopia. Corinne's simply the best person in the world.
Oh, my God.
I hope your studies are going well.
Good luck in your studies, Corinne. Brittany Furry?
Brittany Furry?
Brittany Furry.
Thank you, Brittany.
Neuropath.
Thank you.
That name is familiar to me. We probably talked to him before.
Dang, Nate Tweehues. Or
Tweehues.
Tweehues?
I think it's Tweehues.
It's a cool name.
Right.
Thanks, Nate.
Great. Thanks, Nate. And with all that out of the way, let's get to the show. All right, heroes, let's meet our party for this week. I'm really excited because everybody out there knows I love comics. I'm a big fan of comics, especially web comics. They were what I read all throughout high school. So I'm excited to have two webcomic artists from comics that I really love and appreciate. So let's start up with Jess Fink. Jess, welcome to One Shot.
Hi.
Thanks so much for joining us. Kat and I are both huge fans of Chester 5000. For fans who don't know, Chester 5000 is an erotic romance comic about a robot and a woman who is the wife of a brilliant scientist, and that scientist is so busy with science, he has no time for love. So he builds a robot who's all about love. Hilarity and drama ensues. It's a great book, and one of the really cool things about it is there's no dialogue. and everything is conveyed through the action of the comic. Anybody who's a big comic fan knows that's an incredible challenge, and Jess pulls it off really well. So guys, check out Chester. There are a bunch of other really cool projects that Jess is involved in. But first, let's learn a little bit more about Jess. Jess, you're new to role-playing, right?
Yes. I never played it when I was in high school. I had friends who did. I just didn't get into it for some reason. I remember collecting, like, changeling books. Like, I had a bunch of White Wolf fairy books.
Well, those books,
changeling books.
Those books look really cool.
They are. I mostly collected them just because the art was amazing. Like, and I think I had some werewolf books too, where I would just like look through all the, they had like the different symbols for like the different clans of werewolf you could be. And I was just obsessed. I wasn't interested in learning the rules at all. I was obsessed with the fantasy element of it.
Absolutely.
But I never played it.
I feel like that's actually a huge part of role playing is like imagining the world personally with yourself, and not right. So much like putting yourself into it and acting it out. Mm-hmm. When did you like start playing proper?
Well, why did we start playing? I think our friend Alan wanted to try playing D&D because all of our friends have moved away. I used to work at a game company and he used to work at a game company. And the thing with working in games is that we live in New York and there's only like a handful of game companies. So everybody, when they get another job, they just move far away. They go to California or they go to some other country or something like that.
So they don't have to pay for New York anymore.
Right, exactly. So, like, they all got Gabe's jobs in other places, and so he was trying to find a way for us to, like, just hang out and do something. He suggested D&D, so we started playing D&D. And it was a lot of fun, and then Eric discovered One Shot, where you guys played Inspectors. And then we started playing Inspectors all the time, and it's the best game I've ever played.
Oh, man! Oh, that's great! I'm so glad that people... I love that game so much. I'm so glad that more people are playing it. It's super rad. But let's bring Eric into the conversation. Eric, welcome to One Shot.
Thank you very much. I am very happy to be here.
Thank you so much for all the nice things that you say about us on Twitter. I really appreciate it, especially because I am a big fan of Rutabaga.
Thank you very much.
I found you after you mentioned us. I was like, who's this guy? And Rutabaga, for those who don't know, is about an adventure chef. So somebody in a D&D type setting where there's a fantasy world full of monsters and magic. And Rutabaga as a character is somebody who wants to go out, find all these monsters, find all these like magical plants and whatnot, and make cool meals from them, which is a really interesting approach to a fantasy setting. And like, it's definitely a character that Cat Cool would think of. It's just somebody who's like, yeah, I am tangentially involved in adventure, but I am very heavily involved in this cool, weird quest. Mm-hmm. And the art for Rutabaga is great. And right now, Eric is coloring and printing these in really nice looking hardback volumes. It looks great on my comic shelf. So if you like D&D, check out Rutabaga for free, and if you like good books on your shelf, you should pick it up. They're available on Amazon.
Yes, you can go to rutabagacomic.com is where you can read it as the old version, the black and white web comic.
Yes, and you can find all of the links to that in our show notes. Eric, how long have you been playing?
I started the same exact time as Jess.
Oh, wow!
The closest I ever got before this was I went to a local comic shop, and I spent all of my money. I had like $30 and I spent all of it on the RPG book for Aliens because I was obsessed with Aliens and Predator.
Oh, wow. I don't even know what company put that book out.
I don't know. I read it cover to cover. I have no idea what it was talking about. All I thought it was going to do was give me more insight into the Aliens world, which I was so obsessed with. I would read this book and it would tell me like, if you become infected with an alien, it takes like 3 turns or whatever. Like, what's a turn? Is that like a unit of time in space? Like, how long is that? Is that an hour? Is it a day?
Ripley never mentioned that.
I had no idea what a turn was. So I read that, and then my brother read it because he wanted to write a book, like a short story set in the Aliens universe. So he was like reading this and getting all this stuff. So that's as close as I've ever come to playing.
Wow. That's such an interesting intersection. So I actually think a lot of RPGs are a great way to pick up setting details because that's sometimes all they give you is they give you their weird broken system, and then a bunch of stuff that you can't imagine anybody would have thought of that. But yeah, that's so cool. So you guys just very recently started playing. So it was like this year, right?
Yeah, we're babies, D&D babies.
Wow. So I guess we're going to be starting you off with, I mean, you've already played Inspectors, which is wonderful, but this is, I think, a gem of an indie system that we are playing this month, and that is Shooting the Moon. It's a game by Emily Kerr Boss. She designs tons of romance-oriented games, which is a genre that is really overlooked by a lot of role-playing. But the point of this game is you have two people contending over the love and affection of a single person. It's really, really wonderful classic romance stories of two people sparring over one person. And we are going to sort of make up the setting and the characters and everything through the creation rules. We have very few plans that we've come up with beforehand. So we're just going to dive right into this. And the way this game starts off is you have everybody playing collectively build the beloved, who is the character that everybody is trying to win the affections of. And you do that by taking turns and adding attributes to the beloved. Those can be words or phrases that describe this person and why somebody would like this person. And we'll learn a few things about the universe that these people occupy as we learn those things about the beloved. Let's start off with the first suitor is supposed to come up with the first detail. And since we haven't worked that out beforehand, whoever has anything that they want to say first can add an aspect to the beloved.
Well, I think that whatever the world that these people exist in, the beloved is going to be in some way famous.
Okay. I'm marking famous down on the sheet. I like famous. And that makes Eric suitor number one. Jess, what about you? Suitor number two, what detail do you want to add to the beloved? Now, they want to point out in the game, it can be something about the character's life. It can be something about the character's body or personality or beliefs. Whatever you come up with is something that people would appreciate about this character. And like little details add up to a very evocative picture.
They're very mysterious. How about like a very mysterious style of dressing?
Ooh. Of clothing. Okay. Dresses mysteriously.
Goth, maybe.
I'm picturing like veils and like things that obscure the face.
Kind of witchy.
Ooh. And since you can add all sorts of details to this character that become very evocative, and they can sometimes be silly and superficial, I am going to add, but for days.
Sounds good.
Is this a rumor that there's a but for days because they're dressed so mysteriously?
Well, they dress mysteriously, but that doesn't mean, hey, this could be a society where like it's unacceptable to show anything but your butt. So, we have no idea.
Big Endians and Little Endians?
I could also put rumored, but for days.
Fabled.
I like fabled even better. All right, so that brings us back to Suitor 1 for the next attribute of this person.
Yeah, I mean, I assume I can't break this. Like, anything I say, I can't break. I guess I could say, like, they've been dead for 100 years. But
well, whatever you say, James is going to have to do it. So.
Yeah.
Let's say that they are. Would compulsive liar be all right?
Oh, compulsive liar.
I won't say compulsive because that's. I think that's. Let's just say untruthful.
They're really good at it.
Yeah, I would say a really good liar because again, these are desirable aspects that somebody really wants. I'm not sure I want to be with a compulsive liar, but being with a really good liar, like I could see that being advantageous.
Maybe we can do something with their attitude. Like maybe they're very to sunder, like hard to please. Like, how do you describe that?
Aloof.
Kind of aloof. Yes. Like aloof.
Yeah, I like that the character we're describing is definitely the love interest of 50% of the high school romance manga that I've ever read.
Uh-huh.
a famous, mysterious, aloof liar who's got a great butt.
Yep.
I am going to say ambitious. Alrighty. So we have this person who is a really good liar, and that is a desirable attribute. They're famous and mysterious and aloof. Like, all of that sort of stands for itself, along with the ambition. You guys were throwing out earlier working with, like, either con artists or mystics of some variety. I really am a little bit stuck on this high school romance manga thing just because of the beloved that we have built here. The areas where we're really going to be defining the setting are through opportunity, obstacle, and dream. So the opportunity is the reason that this person's suitors have a chance. There's something in this character's life that they need help with, and it's going to become the prize. The certain thing that you guys are questing after in order to get in the good graces of the beloved. I like the idea of high school. That's the thing that I will tie us to. It can be a weird high school. It can be like a high school for con artists. But I definitely like the idea of putting us in a high school situation because, like, it's such low stakes, but also the highest stakes that you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well, it already sounds like the beloved that we've described is in Slytherin, so.
Oh, man. Yeah, we could just straight up do Harry Potter right now. I would go for that in a heartbeat.
Is there an American magic college in the Harry Potter universe?
Actually, J.K. Rowling very recently said that she is going to announce where that is.
Oh my god!
Well, how about we scoop her on it?
Yeah, we should definitely scoop her. The thing that Kat always insisted on about the American school is that it should be in Salem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's like, I would like it to be Salem or Area 51. To sort of like tie into the American mythology of it. Yeah, we could say our setting is an American wizard school. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be tied into the Harry Potter universe, copyright J.K. Rowling.
Yes.
Oh man, I'm having flashbacks of all the fan fictions I read now.
If they're just a team, the opportunity would be them like really doing anything big, like becoming headmaster or anything like that. It would be something smaller.
Yeah. I like it being something smaller. I think actually the best order to do this might be coming up with an obstacle or the dream. Let's start with the dream. That's what this person wants to do. And as the beloved, that is going to be my goal for the character throughout the game, is guiding this character to their dream, whether that is with or without the assistance of either one of the suitors. I am going to say this person's dream... Because this is an American wizarding school, but still a boarding school, I'll say this person wants to become head boy, but there's an election. So this person needs to be elected, like, president of the school.
So that's the dream?
That is the dream. So then we come up with an obstacle to that dream. What is holding this person back from that?
They have accrued a couple of years of in-school detention.
So
any chance of them getting out to campaign?
I kind of like bad boy reputation.
Yeah.
Okay, and then opportunity. This is like your main quest as the suitors, because of this, of the beloved's bad boy reputation and that he wants to be school president. You guys can do something. You both have the same idea, like, oh, if I do this, he'll be able to win the election. And because I helped him, he will notice me.
Well, I mean, if Jess suggested the equivalent of whatever Slytherin would be. So what they would do is something underhanded.
Well, we don't have to be a smart.
I guess we don't, but I mean, we could either do something like do something bad to the other people in the race,
mm-hmm.
or do something to the entire school,
mm-hmm.
like a charm, or either we turn everybody else into frogs and bugs so that they can't show up.
Wow, the only way this person can win is a competition. Wow. It's usually best to make the opportunity something concrete. Perhaps the school is going to be particularly vulnerable to either transmogrification or suggestion coming up within the next few days, and you guys need to put together whatever potion or something this is.
Okay, so
let's say that
we're going to do voter fraud. Yes. It's going to be some sort of like lunar event is going to be happening that will
some stars are aligning,
make the school vulnerable.
Yeah.
The charms that protect the school voting machine are going to be weakest at the new moon. So I'll put new moon approaching. All right, so now that we have the beloved all datted out and everything, it's time to give this person a name. And
can you quickly run through the beloved stuff again? I have liar, famous, ambitious, nice butt, aloof.
Yeah, so this person is famous, mysterious.
Mysterious.
Right, with billowing, mysterious glowing.
A butt for days, which is fabled. Really good liar, aloof, and ambitious. Their dream is to be school president. Their obstacle is his bad boy or her bad boy reputation. And the opportunity is a new moon is approaching, which will weaken the protective charms on school voting machines.
Okay, so a name.
I was thinking Alphonsus, which is not a cool name.
Alphonsus?
Alphonsus?
It's not a cool name at all.
Well, it gets into the fonts.
You could, yeah. you just made him Fonzie.
No! There's nothing about Fonzie that's Slytherin. Come on.
Oh, man. Yeah, Fonzie's way too good to be anything, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it should be nicknameable. That's, like, mm-hmm. absolutely... Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Jack as a first name. That's like super American, grounds it in American wizard school.
I can't think of anything.
I'm going to go with Jack Crow. I feel like crows are kind of dark, mysterious birds. So we've got Jack Crow, our super mysterious and aloof bad boy who wants to be class president.
For some reason.
Yeah. Who knows? Like, maybe we'll discover during the game why he has that particular ambition.
Yeah.
Look, guys, there's more to Jack.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, hey, something about a nice butt.
You only care about his butt.
Okay, so now we create attributes for the suitors. And we will start with suitor one. And that is creating something that is either a synonym or an antonym. So, suitor number one, is there anything that, like, grabs you about the aspects we have on that character sheet that you would like to define for yourself?
I was going to say honest, but how are they going to...
Well, the cool thing about the suitor attributes is you also modify them. So, every single thing that you put down there has a but to it. So if you said honest, your character would be like, famously honest, but I lie in such and such situation.
Right.
So there's going to be, and then once we put that down, suitor number two would have the antonym of that. So it'd have honest, and instead of really good liar, we'd put something like dishonest. And then modify that with a but. So,
right. Okay. So I will just say. So do I do the but as well?
We do that. We modify them on the next round.
So I'll just say honest then.
Honest. Okay. And now, Jess, you get to add an attribute to the first suitor, being either a synonym or antonym for one of the words or concepts that we have on the beloved sheet. And or actually, it doesn't even need to be related to the beloved at this point. You can come up with something.
Oh, for you?
You're coming up with something for him, and it just has to have an antonym that would then apply to you.
I was going to say terrible, but...
just IBS.
Well, no, just that you don't have a good butt. So. Not a great butt.
Do we do butt magic at this school?
We don't know that they didn't do butt magic at Harry Potter school.
It's true. They just never mentioned it.
All of the good wizards ended up being attractive in the movies. That's true. Like, I think the butt conspiracy has some legs.
Where do you think they keep their wand? You could go off of this, like the same amount of ambitious or...
And like, yeah, and it can be something else like rich. Because then the other person has an antonym that can be poor.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about, let's say, you're not very strong.
Okay. So, weak. And that would be putting down, for Jess's character, strong.
Look, it takes a lot of strength to be dishonest.
It does. To be that dishonest. And now it's time for me to create one. And let's see. We've got an honest and weak character. And then I think I'm going to put down intelligent. Which then for Jess's character, we could put down dumb. Yes. And then finally, Eric, you get to decide the last aspect for attribute for your character.
Trying to picture what I look like here. I guess that's me in high school. What else did I have? I had a terrible haircut. I had
aliens crossing
a bunch of terrible shirts. I had
a collection of many sarcastic shirts.
I'll say terrible fashion.
Terrible fashion sense. Oh my god, I love it. Oh,
this is hitting close to home.
that means you know what I get.
Yeah, you look real good.
Yes, stylish.
I'm stupid, but I look good.
All right, so now we get to modify these. So we have suitor one who is honest, but. What is the vulnerability or the hole in this honesty?
I more have. Can we do suitor two? Because I have one that I thought would fit well with.
Okay.
The against the dishonest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Suitor two is dishonest, but can't lie to authority figures.
Oh man, that's so good.
That sucks.
So like other students and people that they see as below them, they can lie all they want, but.
But, like, I can't lie to Dumbledore or whatever.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to lie to
McGonagall.
American Dumbledore.
American Dumbledore.
That's right, I'm American Dumbledore!
I picture him dressed like Super Dave.
That's right. American Dumbledore can be American gay, which is, like, a lot less reserved about it. Oh, I love it. I'm going to put down honest but scheming.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so that brings us to weak and strong.
So maybe physically weak, but...
I was going to say I got a high pain tolerance.
Oh.
Ooh, weak but a high pain tolerance.
So I can really take a beating.
That's kinky as hell.
Oh, yeah.
Strong but fragile.
Fragile, yeah. Easy crier.
Fragile. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, you were totally... This is just Malfoy. God, did she play this game before she wrote?
Strong, but I'm going to... Yeah, I'll put that crybaby is more evocative for me. Oh, that's so cute. I like all of these characters so much. All right, so we have intelligent, but... And I think my favorite thing for characters who are smart but dumb in all comics and everything is intelligent but prideful. There's your Doctor Dooms and your Lex Luthors, and then we have dumb, but
dumb and humble. It's humble dumb. That's your last name.
That is a great last name, though. Oh my god, humble dumb.
That's perfect. Yeah, it kind of doesn't fit with the rest of their stuff.
There's like. observant or lucky. Like, one of the things about these modifiers is they don't have to undo what the aspect that the character has, but they do, you know, like, add something else to you. So, like, if you're dumb but lucky, it certainly doesn't undo you being dumb, but you can always luck your way out of different situations. Charming.
Charming. I was going to say charming.
And stylish, but
bad skin.
Stylish,
high school baby.
Bad skin.
I've been taking medication for so long.
Hey, I think.
Why you got to bring that up?
Oh, I think we're gonna do bad skin.
I mean, technically, since we're in high school, we all have terrible skin. You just have even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Bad fashion, but smells great.
Bad fashion, but smells. I kind of like that. It smells great.
It's like cookies and strawberries.
All right. So now we come to the conflicts for each suitor. And that is something that would provide you with difficulty in questing after the beloved's affections. And that can be any number of things. Taking a look at these people, suitor one is honest but scheming, weak but with a high pain tolerance, prideful, or intelligent but prideful, has a terrible fashion sense but smells great. So this is definitely a nerd. We can this person falls into those tropes really, really well. So your conflict could be that you are just not in the right social strata. Like, the beloved is just way out of your league.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
I know how to roleplay that.
For suitor number two, this person is dishonest and can't lie to authority, strong but a crybaby, dumb but charming, and stylish with bad skin. This person is like a total popular kid.
Yeah, they feel like a jock.
Yeah, well, I was thinking like kind of a thug, like maybe not a jock, but like a just kind of like a wannabe popular kid, just like hanging on.
Like the
going
kid
with the flow.
The kid who was a certain, like, they were just like a kid, and then summer happened, and they came back, and all of a sudden they, like, their pants are down a little lower, and they're walking a little slower, and they're little.
Yeah, I'm wearing, like, skinny jeans, and I have amazing hair. And people are like, oh, I guess you could hang out with us.
Yeah, man. Again, stylish. Very stylish.
When I was growing up, we'd call them posers. Or fake. But I guess those are getting more into, like, aspects of them. That's not really a conflict.
All right, yeah, what's the conflict with the beloved?
What if the beloved used to babysit you?
Oh, my God. Well,
it sees you as a...
We're all the same age, though.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, maybe there's some kind of magic that I can't do that is preventing me from... Or is giving me... Maybe there's some sort of side effect to doing the magic that we're doing. Maybe it makes my skin terrible. Maybe it makes my skin even worse. It makes me gross scales or something, like the magic that we're trying to do.
Oh,
I'm trying to do to help the beloved. I'm allergic.
You're allergic to dark magic.
Like, I'm allergic to dark magic. I grow scales. My skin gets even more terrible.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, so now we define a person, place, and thing for each suitor. These are advantages that you guys have. The person is, you know, like an ally. A place is like, you know, somewhere that you're comfortable and confident. And the thing is, you know, a special tool that you have access to that you might use.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty good with some of the faculty. Let's say... I don't know how to relate this to the school of this game, but in high school, I was good friends with the tech department, so all the computer nerds and stuff like that. Surprise, surprise. So I wouldn't know how to relate that. There's not really an IT department at a magical school.
Oh, man. Well, you know, maybe England is just backwards and doesn't use computers. Maybe there's magical IT in America.
I'll say, well, I'll just be friendly with faculty.
Friendly with faculty.
Not a specific person.
Yeah. You know what? I think we can write it off as all faculty.
Okay.
I think that's good. I don't think that'll get in the way too much.
Because of that, I have full access to the teacher's lounge.
Oh, that's perfect.
God, you're such a nerd.
Thanks, baby. I'll spare in love and war.
So grossed out.
Thing. This is a piece of, an inventory item.
Yeah.
Let's see. I have a sibling's fourth year spellbook.
Ooh.
That I should be half. That I use in my schemes.
That's good. Okay. So that brings us over to Suitor 2.
So for person, I'm going to say that I am... Maybe I'm just friends with, some nefarious assholes. I'm just picturing popular kids. They know people who...
What about the dropouts?
Yeah.
They're friends with the dropouts.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to put down Legion of Dropout Thugs. Because you're charming, so...
That's what they call themselves, also.
I think the Legion of Dropout Thugs would be like a Terry Pratchett guild.
Yeah, definitely.
Place. Let's see. I'm sort of building a very thuggy character. There's a place that I can hang out. Maybe there's a popular kid hangout that I have access to.
The roof?
That kids can get into. Yeah.
The roof.
Hang out on the roof. Smoking cigarettes. Spitting on nerds.
You just hold your wands up to your mouth and suck on them to pretend they're cigarettes.
Oh. You don't know where that wand's been.
It's in your
it's
butt.
Got dragon shit in it and stuff.
The core of your wand is pure dragon shit.
Hey, it chooses you.
And what's your thing?
What's your thing?
My thing.
It's your thing.
Well, I feel like since I'm stylish, it should be some sort of article of clothing, like a magical relic that
Ooh.
Aids me somehow. Maybe like a
chameleon suit. It can become any clothes you want.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, I like that. That's cool. That's like a disguise-y thing.
I like it even more because, if it's this thing that allows you to disguise yourself, you're still bad at lying to authority.
Oh, yeah. I could be dressed in a full teacher's uniform, and I'd still be like...
It's me, Jess.
Ah, you must be the new teacher.
Nope, I'm wearing a chameleon suit.
Okay, so now that we have the opportunity, the opportunity in place is the new moon is approaching, so that brings us to the prize. And the prize is more of a single object, something concrete that's not conceptual, because it makes it way easier if you're going after a concrete thing than an abstract concept. What is the thing that you guys are trying to get in order to bring to the beloved and be like, here, this is the key to the election, and therefore my key to your heart?
Okay, so this is an object that relates to the dream.
That relates to the dream and opportunity, because it's, it's all tied in together.
I think it should be a potion that we're some sort of spell or something that we're definitely not supposed to have access to,
mm-hmm.
that we're trying to get, that will allow us to take advantage of the new moon's vulnerability.
Okay, so the elections are being held on the new moon, because we're wizards and everything is related to that stuff. But it's also when all magic is either more powerful or people are more susceptible to it.
I think people are more susceptible to it.
Okay. Yeah, that would make more sense, because otherwise the magic that we're doing wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a potion or that either affects
magical
other people
item
or a necklace or a choker that they could wear that would make whatever they say.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? Really persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
So either we're going to get them elected through their augmented means, or we're going to mess everyone else up. What do you want to do?
I think Okay, let's make it... Yeah, I think it should be something that the beloved can wear. That so they only have a brief period of time where they can campaign, because they're always in detention. So let's say they have like 1 second to just be like, yeah, I think it should be like this, and then they leave. But then everyone's just like blown away by whatever they said because they're wearing this magical charm.
Okay.
Like, it's, and it should be maybe like a, what's the thing in Harry Potter? The diadem? Is that what it's called?
I don't remember.
It's like a diadem is like a crown.
Well, I know D&D has the circlet of persuasion.
Or I'm just seeing this in my head as how it would be filmed. It's a potion, but it's in like a long cylindrical thing, and it's kind of like a grenade, and you drop it, so Jack Crow would give his speech and it would be terrible, and then you drop it like a mic drop, and it would like explode, and there'd be gas everywhere, and everyone would be like, oh snap. Just picturing him dropping a potion like a mic drop.
So like a gas of suggestibility.
Yeah. I think school's dumb. Drop.
He's so good.
No, we'll do your thing. Do yours. So an article of clothing that makes them charming.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, should we be doing something more? That just seems a little on the nose. Or is that better to be on the nose?
I mean, it's fine either way. We, you know, these are role-playing games. It's about how you play it, not what's involved in it. Because, you know, everybody plays a, you know, dwarf barbarian who has an axe. Like, it doesn't make it, just because it's not an original concept or not, like, totally brilliant, doesn't mean it's not going to work great in the game. So
right.
Why not like something like hair gel of charm or something like that?
Yeah.
It's a thing that has been confiscated by the faculty and has gone into their legendary contraband vault. And it's like something that some old student made years ago and caused tons of problems.
What was it called?
Hair gel of charm. All right, so with all of that information, we can now name these two, and we'll be ready to go.
Oh boy, more names.
The most fun part of any RPG.
I got mine right off the bat.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, shoot.
My name is Flyvaw.
Flyball?
Flyvaw. Flyvaw. Cranky Shanks.
I was just looking up words on the internet, and I saw Spooky, and I was like, oh, I'll be Spooky Mulder. No, it would be Ned Godkiller.
Whoa.
Ned?
Ned Godkiller of the Massachusetts Godkillers.
Is an insane name for a nerd.
What? Ned's not that bad.
Oh my god, Ned Godkiller. Ridiculous. You're actually making me feel like my last name isn't ridiculous enough.
Well, would you rather Starkiller? I know you have an affinity for...
All right, so now that everybody is fully built up and named, we are ready to start the game. All right, the way that this works, everybody is going to get 3 turns before the end of the game. And during those turns, we create a scene, first of all. The player who is in control describes a scene. It starts with the first suitor, and so you will describe a scene where you're interacting with and, you know, perhaps flirting with the beloved. And then during that scene, the other suitor is going to be able to present a challenge to you. And that's when we're going to start building your dice pool and see whether you manage to overcome that challenge or the second suitor wins out. And the second suitor can challenge you either by like directly doing something in the background to like embarrass or humiliate you, or just setting forth events in motion by fate that are like trying to hamper you from your goal. So it's just any scene that you could possibly imagine where you would have an opportunity to interact with the beloved. I'll play the beloved in that. We'll do a small scene, and then Jess will be able to come in and say what goes wrong, and we'll see whether or not you're able to overcome that. And Jess, when you're saying what goes wrong, you are going to be able to add a new trait to Eric's sheet. The example that they give in the book is a scene where, like, people are at a ball, the beloved is dancing with the first suitor, and the second suitor, who is a wizard, turns the first suitor into a frog. So you can write, you'd be able to write down on Eric's sheet, oh, you're a frog now. And if he fails his role, he would be a frog.
I have an idea for the scene.
Cool.
Like a extracurricular, maybe, or not extracurricular, like a catch-up thing for students who have like fallen behind a little bit. And because I'm just so intelligent, I'm teaching this little class.
Yeah, you're a tutor, essentially.
Yeah, I'm tutoring. And Jack Crow is definitely there. And it's all about proper wand motion.
Yes. So
there's lots of like getting behind and like holding the wrist of the person and like,
oh, yeah,
like, no, like this, directing the hand.
Oh, no.
That's so beautiful. I love every single part of it. I'll say our scene probably starts off in one of the classrooms of the school. It's something where you're basically on call to see if anybody needs any tutoring. You generally use this for private study time because you don't like interacting with other people, and most of the faculty knows that and they like you, so they try to, you know, keep you out of Dodge and just like, hey, you have this private room to study in where nobody's going to beat you up. But
I spend most of this time trying to crack, because the fourth year spell books are incomprehensible to me because they have like a spell on them. So I spend most of this time trying to crack it so I can learn the higher level spells.
Yeah. Yeah. But theoretically, any student can show up and drop in and ask for help. So you're alone in the room, sort of studying away. You're flipping through the book. You're looking at your cheat sheet of runes and symbols that you think the spells have recoded themselves into. You're working very hard and intensely over your books when you hear the door open and close suddenly, and it makes you jump up. And you see Jack Crow strolling into the room lazily, like he's looking around at the different stuff in the room. He goes over to the skeleton that's hanging in the room and he like spins it a little bit, and then in a very Deja Beale style, he slumps down in one of the chairs and leans back.
A chair all the way in the back.
Yeah, exactly, all the way in the back.
There's like six rows and all the way in the back. So Jack is also, like I said, mysterious. Are they swathed in robes and fabrics?
They are. He's definitely got robes and fabrics. It's just the way they hang on him. Like you can sort of see a little bit, and you're like, oh man, that like he probably looks good under there. And even though there's so much fabric in the school uniform, it is, if we're thinking of it, these would be wizards who came over with the pilgrims who founded the American schools. Okay. So these are the most repressed, chaste school uniforms that you can possibly imagine. There's
their wizard hats have a buckle on them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, he's leaning back in this chair. Yeah, there are a lot of straps in these uniforms. It could be very useful. But he leans back in his chair and he still somehow, even though there's all this fabric, he doesn't appear to be impeded by it at all. He's got a sort of effortlessness about everything that he does.
Yes, and clearly I think that everything comes easy to Jack Crow. So I'm gonna just like slam the book shut so that, and like, you know, tuck them underneath some of my papers, and I'm just like, hi, can I help you?
Don't worry about it, kid. I'm just going to be in here for a little bit.
Oh, were you sent in here?
Yeah, sort of. It was either coming in here or listening to Wagado, you know, go on about how I'm screwing up. So I figured, you know, why not just go with the option where I get a little bit of peace and quiet?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, that's cool. You know, I hide in here too. And just, you know.
Kid, Jack Crow doesn't hide from anything, okay? I'm just here because of the two options that I was presented with. This is the better option.
Yeah. So, Waggedo. What was he saying? Like, what are you screwing up in? I mean, maybe I could help. I don't know.
Oh, God. Okay, so we're learning to evoke or whatever, and, you know, I'm good at it, okay? I'm really good at it. I'm really, really good at it. So when I'm shooting my wand, my stupid wand, which isn't working properly, shoots way more fire out of it than like, he's comfortable with or he thinks is safe for everybody else involved. And I'm like, man, you can't edit me, okay?
Yeah. No. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm pretty good with the wand. Do you want to, like, I don't know, you want me to show you a little bit, like a trick? Like a, I don't know.
Like a trick? What more of a trick do I need than this? And he flicks his wand and a jet of fire shoots out across the room, and then like the camera angle goes to like your vision, and it's slow motion, the fire slowly parts, and there's that wavy heat distortion that's emanating around Jack Crow, and the fire is reflecting off his eyes. They do a little tingle, like a little twinkle in that moment as you got this like soft focus vision of the character. He then brings the wand up near his lips and blows it off.
I'm just like, that was so hot. I mean, that was really warm. I'm really hot. Like, I'm sweating. I've never wanted to be burned to death more in my life. So I'm like, yeah, that was really good. But I don't know. Here, come here a second.
All right.
I stand up and I walk towards Jack.
It lets you approach him, and like there's this long shot of you walking all the way across the room. And then you, like, when you stand next to him, he, like, casually gets up out of his chair. He throws the wand in the air. It catches it and then hands it to you, handle first. All right. You want to do a trick? You do a trick.
Yeah, I take the wand and, like, I... Remembering this one spell that I've...
Can I suggest something at any moment?
Yeah, exactly.
Can I suggest that Jack's wand is, like, unusually heavy to you?
Oh yeah
just like, so heavy.
He's holding it like nothing, and he tosses it to me, and I'm just like, whoa, all the way down to the ground,
fall over.
Like it was a 20-pound barbell and I didn't realize it.
Now do I get one suggestion, or can I just like suggest anything that is a challenge like along the way?
I assume the scene ended between us and then you came in and ruined it.
She can come in at any time and introduce it, and it should, as long as it relates to the active suitor's traits or attributes, which this does, the beloved's attribute or obstacle, the opposing suitor's traits or attributes, or some aspect of the world already described and newly established, she can come in and create a hurdle. And the hurdle is just something that, like, you know, essentially she's making you look a little bit like a fool in front of this guy. And whatever you would show him on the wand is going to go wrong if she gets her way and does this role.
Yes.
All right. So I'm, like, getting ready to... I'm like, let me show you a quick... I'm going to invoke a phoenix.
A phoenix? Man,
and I'm getting ready to like do that spell, and you're gonna come busting in.
Yes,
like Bender from Breakfast Club.
Yes.
And you don't personally have to go in the room if you just want this to go wrong. Okay. Like you don't have to involve your character.
Okay. So
maybe I won't come in yet. I just want the wand to be really heavy.
Okay. Oh, cool.
So there's a spell that I have figured out from the 4th year skill book.
Yeah,
spell book that I'm going to use, which is something that we have not seen because we're a younger year.
Okay.
But the wand is unruly for me because I'm so weak.
Yes. Wait a minute. A phoenix? Hold up a second. No. Phoenix 4th year. Where you're like, there's no way you could produce a phoenix.
Having my wisdom and intelligence challenged dropped some of my fear of being around Jack. And I'm just like, just watch.
Cool. So...
I'm gonna cast it.
What you're doing is now building a dice pool. Jess has a dice pool of 5 dice. It's going to be a flat 5, and you're trying to build a pool against that. Okay, so the first response that you come up with that involves one of your traits gets 2 dice. Okay. You get 1 die for each additional response involving your own trait, and you get 2 dice for suggesting a response that involves aspects of of another character on your same side. So if you use one of my aspects and I go, yeah, that seems to make sense, you would get 2 dice for that. And you're allowed 3 responses. So you can use any of those to build up your pool to rival Jess's dice pool.
And everything is a positive. I can only add dice.
Yeah, you can only add dice.
Okay. So clearly, we are in close proximity to each other, so I'm smelling great.
Yeah.
I smell amazing. does Jack know what that smell is?
Is that like, do you use like a lavender, like shampoo or body wash, man? I'm just asking.
Sure.
That's pretty cool.
Maybe that's too cool. So I'm going to say that, so that's 2 dice for me.
Yes.
And then I'm going to say, because I'm using the 4th year spell book,
mm-hmm.
it gives me 1 die. Because this is a spell that you have never seen before,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to suggest it triggers your ambition. It's something you could learn.
Oh.
That is something that might help you.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see, like, I would see that you could do this and be like, oh yeah, wow, I could use somebody like this on my side.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that would be a pool of 5 dice. So now you roll 5 dice, Jess will roll 5 dice, and we will compare the highest result that each of you has.
And this is a D6.
This is a D6.
All right. So I'm going to go first.
All right. So it looks like the highest that you got on that one, Eric, was a 5.
Now Jess will roll her 5. Oops, I gave her 6.
Let me press the button.
Go ahead, you push the button.
Don't
push clear.
Oh, Jess got 2 6s.
Ooh, man!
What does that mean?
Okay, so and now we actually go to the second pool because you didn't succeed in the first one. Let's see. If the opponent wins, the active suitor gains a trait declared by the opponent, and no one receives any points towards their goal. So, Jess, you now get to apply a trait to Eric.
So I'm doing a fire spell.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to mess it up.
Let's say that you mess up the fire spell. I guess we could tie this into your fashion sense. You're pants. You just catch your pants on fire.
But I'm not the liar.
Oh.
So, I mean, but that wouldn't necessarily be a trait. That, is this is something that persists?
Yeah, this is something that persists. This is like
you're
on fire
okay.
For the rest of the game.
I see. Oh, boy.
I might burn my eyebrows off.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
that
man.
That's so mean. Yeah, let's do...
No eyebrows?
Yeah, let's burn your eyebrows off.
Okay.
No eyebrows. That's so great.
You just wait. Fly Bob.
Call me Fly for short.
I'm going to call you Fly Bob.
That's it for One Shot this week, heroes. We'll be back next week with more Shooting the Moon. If you like our guests and you want to look them up, head over to the show notes where we have links to all of their online projects. Well, actually, probably not all of their online projects, as they are both very prolific, but at least a lot of their online projects. Heroes, I am incredibly excited about this year's Gen Con. I've posted the full one-shot schedule to YouTube, so if you want to see myself, Kat, or JPC at Gen Con, follow the link in the show notes to the YouTube video where I explain everything. I want to make something clear, too. Unless I'm running a game, do not hesitate to approach me. Especially if you are a podcaster, game designer, or just consider yourself an aspiring podcaster or game designer, do not hesitate to approach me. Tell me about who you are and what you're doing. Gen Con is a place to make connections, and you can't do that if you keep yourself from talking to people. If you've got a project,
Trust me, I want to hear about it. I'll be sporting one-shot gear throughout the show, so I should be easy to spot. Thanks again to all of our wonderfully generous Patreon backers. As soon as Gen Con is done, I'll have a lot more time to focus on expanding the secret archive, and I cannot wait to share with you all of the things that I have yet to edit for it. That's also when Kat and myself are going to start shipping out the dice that we promised to our $15 backers. Also, post-Gen Con, we'll be announcing our new milestone goals. Lots to look forward to there. Since you're a fan of podcasts, you might want to check out another one of the shows on the Chicago Podcast Co-op, the Koch Brothers Mystery Show. Join boy detectives, the Koch Brothers, as they use their billions of dollars and shadowy government influence to solve the country's most harrowing crimes. Crimes they most certainly didn't commit. One Shot is a joint production between Tenpenny Press and Peaches and Hot Sauce. Peaches and Hot Sauce is a Chicago-based comedy network with tons of great articles, videos, and live shows for you to attend at peachesandhotsauce.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Be Your Own Pet with Adventure, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes!